session number 11324, reel 1.
Mr. Outerside, reel 1. I know you were in the Home Guard. Can you tell me when you joined up?
Well, when the first of the LDVs, that's the Local Events Volunteers, I'm afraid they got the Look, Duck and Vanishes as a nickname at the time. They were the first ones. And our one post that we had at Acom was up on the top of Acom Fell. This is right on top of the Roman wall at that point.
This is near Carlisle?
No. This is near Hexham. This is where I lived. I lived at Acom near Hexham then. And it's very near the Chester's camp, actually. Well, there where you could see right out, quite up the north, the south, wherever we were, was watching for parachutes. That's what we were told to look for.
When was this?
Well, I don't know the date of when it was first started, the Local Defence Volunteers. But I joined them, when I joined them, we just had double barrel shotguns, and I think there was only probably one or two Remingtons was the first of the rifles we got. That's the American Remingtons, you know. I think they've got a ring-type sight. This was the odd thing about it. There were a ring-type sight that they used. And I think one of the men in the village had an old Lee Enfield from his previous past somewhere. And that's just about it at the beginning. And then slowly we started to get more weapons, then became uniforms. And the uniforms were actually of the county, which is Northumberland. And we wore the badge of the county. That's for the Home Guard. And mainly that was one observation post up on the fell. It was manned with probably about 3 or 4 men per day, you know, per all the time. It was mainly in night when the duty was. It wasn't so much through the day. I don't think there was anyone duty through the day. I think it depended on the normal people doing their normal work at that time. But at night time, we used to go up for the cover from dusk through onto the dawn. That's at the beginning.
Did this Home Guard unit have a number or name?
I don't think so. It was just Acom, the Acom village people that was in it.
So it was called the Acom Home Guard?
Yeah, probably the Acom Home Guard.
What type of people joined it?
Well, men from the village. There was one or two which had been old soldiers. I'm trying to remember his name now. And he was sort of a sergeant. Made a sergeant then, as he became a sergeant, and he started to, later on we got to stages where we were doing a bit of drilling and stuff like this and a little bit more work on it. But in the beginning, it was virtually a band of volunteers working the system, which was a local volunteer system, which is what it was.
So you had an officer in charge?
Well, we did one from Hexham. I think he came over from Hexham, an officer. Was formed, when it slowly became formed, the LDV, it became the Home Guard, and then it became more highly organised. But in the start, it was the Local Defence Volunteers, which was really a private thing. You didn't have uniforms or anything. You just got an armband. I had an armband up the years ago, just an elastic armband with an LDV on that you put on your arm. That's all you had.
And you were about 19?
About that, yes, then.
What rank did this 18. Officer have?
I can't remember truly, not now. Not this stage, anyway. Because, as I said, it was the Home Guard later. This was in the beginning of the LDV. The Home Guard, we had General Morant, which was actually a retired general living in the Acom village. And I think he came up once or twice to us. From Hexham we got... I remember there was one chap, I think Ronnie Turner... He was an officer in the Home Guard before he went in the forces as well. This is people that later rejoined the forces. Being honest with you, when I did join up, I'm pleased I didn't do too much of the drilling stuff because the guards don't like someone else's system. I would have to unlearn what I really learned at the depot. I mean, that was what it meant. So I was quite fortunate in that sense. I hadn't absorbed too much of their system of drill and so forth.
Were people enthusiastic about joining the Home
Guard? Oh, yes. I mean, it was actually, there was probably farmers' sons as well, which could not go away at that time. But they felt they wanted to do something. And we felt the need for it. And it was quite a few farmers' sons among them. And people which were reserved occupations at that time.
Did you really think that the Germans would land?
We never knew. We didn't know, actually, at that time whether... we felt that we had to do something about it, because what we were told at the time, we were releasing regular forces by doing the Home Guard duties. This is basically what we understood. It wasn't so much them coming. It was releasing other men to get to France to do their fighting and stuff like this till they got our services built up.
You know the program Dad's Army that yes. appears on the television, which of course yes. is meant to be absurd and a yes. comedy, but does it bear any sort of resemblance to what the old days
were
like?
Well, we had some laughs about it. You know what I mean? There was little things where you get laughs. I mean, I can remember, this is when I was in the army. One Sunday, we were across it in London District on the south side, Guildford Way. They put us off on the tube trains and supposedly parachutes landed. And we were testing the Guildford Home Guard defences. I can remember, we went up, there's a sort of a ditch with water in it, a concrete ditch, but there's only a little bit of water running in it. And the officer slipped us into this ditch, and we got really into the heart of Guildford. And it's we're pulled up, and I can always laugh yet when I think about it. It was a Sunday morning, and we're travelling along this, like, upper street, and there's an old man lying with a gun facing up over. And he says, just then his daughter had come out and said, here's a pot of tea, Dad. I says, bang, bang, you're dead. Tea's no good to you. A pot of tea. And we just had a laugh. He said, I'll see you in the pub, son. And the old man said, then we're on my way. But there was a lot of laughs about it. But at the same time, let's be honest, if they'd come, they were there. And they would have been trying. But, I mean, they didn't feel the urgency properly at that stage in time. But the moment they knew there'd been landings, I think the urgency would have been there. And there were quite laughs about it, lots of things about it. I mean, they came raiding us once. And they were really rough. I mean, they were squirting, they were fire hydrant rounds and all things. I mean, they upset the barracks because they'd got in, you know what I mean, in the first place. But more than that, they squirted the water around and all sorts. And I heard one of the lads say, I don't like them, they play a bit rough at times.
Where was this?
This is in Harrow. This is when we're in Harrow. But it was accepted. We used to, from our point of view as soldiers, it used to be happening at weekends. And sometimes the soldiers had the weekend off and he wasn't getting it, you know, because he's having to go and test the Home Guard somewhere. But generally speaking, no, there's a lot of comedy, but it's, I think, if the pressures had been there, they would have been there. That's my feelings.
How did you take to the Guards training, which is notoriously disciplined?
Well, in the first place, I volunteered. I wanted to be in the Guards. So, straight away, the squad I was in was a Guards volunteer squad as well. They were all volunteers in our squad. And one of my moves was to actually go into police, join the Guards, and eventually come back into police. I mean, not just as a single item, just join the Guards, the end of it. My idea was to go into police force. Well, when I joined, as a volunteer squad, you have to keep saying, well, I volunteered myself, when all the disciplines and all the things that you're doing. You're saying to yourself, well, I volunteered for it. And give them this. There wasn't a thing in the drill book that's not taught at the depot. In fact, there was things taught there which you virtually forgot it. There's a thing which is known as pile arms. On the old Lee Enfield rifle, there's a swivel swing on the top of the rifle, and you put three together, and you pile your arms into it. Well, the moment you come to leave with our rifles, they took the slings off the top of the rifle, so they didn't mean in that... they weren't going to be used anymore, which they were never. I never ever knew them used. But at that depot, it was part of the drill instruction and the weapon training or whatever it was. And I give them this. They give you confidence. They're basically, I mean, they used to say, I still remember this day, the basis of all bayonet fighting is to instill comrades, instill confidence in your comrades and your own ability with the weapon. Now, you'll say, well, why do I remember this all these years? Well, if you didn't remember it, you're liable to be going around the cricket field with a rifle at the high port to find it. Then you come back with the answer when you got around the cricket field. It's a big field. And this is part of their system of making you remember. And if you remember all the details of your stuff, it stands you stead later on. And there's lots of times after. Even when we're going to North Africa, we're on a ship, and there was Americans on it. And these Americans, I can always remember, there's a squad sent to Americans for them to see us in action. We had an American squad came, and we saw them with a Springfield rifle. But I was one of the detailed squad to go to Americans on the Windsor Castle. And when we went there, the sergeant said, we'll put a squad of nine men down. One's got a gun, the machine, like the Bren gun, and the other's number one, number two, and we call them the numbers out. He said, when we have any troubles, we call Fallout 1 as though he's been hit, or Fallout 7, for whatever he's been hit. And what happened was, he said, Fallout 1, and the Americans couldn't get over, because it was me as number two, slewed on my side and battered away from my feet. He said, he's in the road and he's dead. They couldn't understand, this is their training, you keep down and you do all these things. And this is basically, a lot of the training comes in, and it's drilled into you all the time. And I'm always thankful that I was well trained. My time in training compared to a lot of the other ones. Here's my daughter.
I noticed that with the 6th Battalion of the Coldstream Guards, you said that you were used as part of the Churchill Defence Line round London.
Yes.
What was that?
Well, we understood it. It was a defence line in the event probable invasion. We were actually, I mean, at that stage, the possibilities of an invasion was there. So we were, this way I understood it, we were actually part of the defence line formed around London. We were, were guarding the airfields, and Northolt was one of our, we had a company actually on Downsbound Ridge, just up next to the airfield there. And we had another company up Royslip Way, which was where your fighter control was actually out that way. And we were in Harrow itself, but we exercised in the area generally. You know what I mean? That was around there. One of the places you'll find, I wrote and I said about Coast's mission. Their function, so I understood it anyway, was in the event in an invasion by the Germans, either way, their duties was to take the VIPs, royals, government, whatever it is, up the country towards Liverpool, and if the situation warranted, they were going on a cruiser from Liverpool to Canada. That's what we understood. But their function was to stay there with armoured cars. Now, they never travelled directly with the money, with the royals or the government or church or where it was. They travelled on roads parallel to them. In the event of their trouble, the ones that was travelling with them, which was a jeep, motorcycle outriders, they would wireless back, and they would come into them, and they were down by protection. Or if there'd been any parachutes dropped, it was obvious they couldn't, you know what I mean, between the sites, they harbour them in. And that's what their function was. Now, as they lost the need for it, they were absorbed into other duties. You know what I mean? That was at that stage, that was there. It was a thing there, necessary if it had to be. But, I mean, we were, twice I worked with this, where a young lieutenant just got into the Bren carrier, and we just went on the road. Never knew where we were going. We just went off maps. And it used to be sort of frustrating because you never knew what you're doing. But I happened to overhear one, want some talking, and I realised what our function was. And we were just probably, there may have been more moving around at that stage than what the coats as mission could cope with. And we were just being absorbed into taking a run with somebody, whoever it was. So we, as I say, went on the road, sat by the roadside, and then for ages, making meals and so forth, and then just came back again. But it was duty, it was a necessary duty at that time.
Why was it called the Coates's mission?
It was Colonel Coates was the man in charge of it. But that was just, I probably made this guy that I don't know, Coates's mission. But that's what we knew it as. It was at Watford Way. But I would say we just went on a with the radios, and we just went on the road and the radio link, and we never seen anyone. That was my situation. We just on the roads, switching from one map to another map, and then we just stopped. You know, we didn't know who it was, hadn't a clue what it was. We knew we were on the exercise train. That was just part of our training supposed to be. But at the same time, that's what our reason, what it was later on, after we got to meeting some of the men that was on it, Coates' mission, some of the lads. Because I'm only scout cars. They were not Bren carriers normally, they're scout cars that they had on there.
Now, can you tell me about how you came to be involved with the North Africa landings?
Yes.
This was after you changed to the 2nd Battalion.
The 2nd Battalion, yes. But what happened was, I went to Blairgowrie as a volunteer. There was a detachment volunteers, reinforcements to go to Blairgowrie. When we got there, men sometimes put in specialists, but we were tested in Stirling on Bren carriers, and see we were qualified as Bren carriers. Well, I'd been a regular drivers in the 6th Battalion, so, I mean, that was easy. But they were quite pleased that there was actual truly drivers and not just a driver in name. When they got them in there, they didn't know the job. So we went there and we cleaned up. After the battalion moved out, all their vehicles, when we arrived, were already taken to Liverpool. They wanted to be shipped. We actually went round the billets, squaring up the billets when they'd all gone. The battalion moved out. Then we moved out. Well, we didn't know where we were going. First of all, we went from Blairgowrie, Perth, Edinburgh, Newcastle, Carlisle, then up to Gurock to get on the boat. You know what I mean? They took us on a roundabout route. And we got on the boat, and when we got on, there was a lot of other reinforcement groups with us. As I say, there was an American group on there. There was different people, but they're mainly reinforcement people on the ship. I think myself, it's you have the different waves going in, and like become a second wave in, or the first wave in. The first wave, like troops. Your second wave is your reinforcements to them. Your third wave becomes your supplies and so forth. And I think this is basically how the manoeuvre, the true thing of it. You know what I mean? I know when we did it, Pantelleria landings later on, that was after the North African campaign was up. I was selected for it, my Bren carrier. But I was sitting on the docks waiting to go when they said, switching, we want water tankers. The water supplies on the Pantelleria Islands have been hit badly, so they're wanting tankers in this collapse. It's surrendered. So, I mean, I never actually went. I was sitting on the docks waiting to go, and they didn't need us. So I can imagine the same would happen when they're putting them in, you know, on the beaches and so forth. You get the first wave in, the second wave in, and the third wave, or whatever it is. As I say, we went in as the second wave in, I'm assuming, the reinforcements, and then we came back on the docks to start unloading the third wave stuff coming in, which is, yeah, ammo and all these things, you know, to get them all stabilised and that.
So you made the voyage from Liverpool to Algiers.
That's correct.
Was it an uneventful voyage?
It was quite good, actually. We actually, I think, we came down. It was across the Bay of Biscay, there was just a little bit, but there wasn't much because, I mean, it was a Union cattle boat. It was a proper passenger ship, and it was fairly stable in the air. There was not a lot of sickness, a bit of it, actually. And then I think we didn't pull in Algiers. Gibraltar. We came through at night, actually. Gibraltar, I can remember that. We could see the lights of Tangiers in the Gibraltar. Not Gibraltar, but the Tangiers side of it. We could see the lights. And we came through at night. But we, Malta, there was some of the naval personnel and then went off at Malta. We had been told on the ship, so far through our journey, that what was going to be. Well, I think it was in the Med before we were actually told. And then we went in the lands in there then. It was a big convoy. I mean, it was, you know, when you looked out, we were probably about, I don't know, forgetting the number, how far we're back and how far we're in from the side. But the troopers is nearly always in the middle. I think that's to make them that way. Or to ship them that way, I should say.
Did you have any inkling as to what you were going to do?
Not really, no. Just there was a, we were going in on the land and we had the battalion. See, with me being from the 6th Battalion, I didn't know. But the 2nd Battalion had been doing landings in up in Scotland. They'd been training the assault landings and all this. So they had all the assault training. The Bren carriers, when they come off, would take the assault gear off. Well, I didn't know what assault gear was till I was actually going to do these pantorian landings. And then they said they put a wood on the back and they put sealing around it. And they put this on and they do the different things for to make it the waterproof for doing assault landings with. But, well, they did my carrier. But they didn't, as I say, we didn't need it at the finish. So the equipment would be made up for that. And they were, I think the battalion was scheduled to go in at Bourne. But the Bourne docks was such a mess, I think, that they switched us to Algiers. And then they had to go up. The battalion was supposed to go up to there. Well, that was what I think was the schedule was. But as I said, we were just landing in Algiers, and I was still in a reinforcement company, not belonging to the, not got connected to the battalion. And we were acting as, come away at Algiers to the side, and that was this, along the coast, Fort de Loo. And we were going in every day. Trucks, there was trucks there, and we marched out. But later they got trucks, plenty of trucks flying around, taking the stuff out the dumps, away out the town, to stop them from being hit. It used to be a bit, it could get a bit hairy because it's a curious thing. You knew that the tins of petrol were probably about 12 inches square at the top, and they were just tin. And they had an 80 on, that was for the motor vehicles, and 100 on for the aircraft. So your 100 octane or the 80 octane and diesel. Now, when a 3-tonner with a canopy over it comes in and you're starting to unload, the vapour and fumes, you can nearly feel drunk over it. You know what I mean? You're coming out of there by the time the load finished and you're sitting down and sort of, your head was swimming a bit. And this was the heat getting at the vapours that was in there. But you're unloading them onto these fields, like it's like an airfield, a big field. And we'll keep putting them down, putting a big area, and then putting netting over them, and then keep putting the dumps out around the fields to till eventually they ship them up to the front. Later on, we loaded trains, they got trains running, we loaded trains onto the coaches with the food. The food was mostly these compo boxes. Which is like, they used to be quite good. A, B and C, I think, and D they were. You know, the compos. You have a tin in there with biscuits, which is sealed. And you break the seal on that. They think Breezy Blackpool, I think, it used to be some of the name on the packets of the biscuits. But you had those, and then you had a tin of sausages. It was 14 men one day, a pack. But I've never known a situation where we've had 14 men feed off it. We've always been less than that. We've always had more. I've never known a situation where we've just struggling for the there. You know what I mean? In that sense, you always had enough food for to eat. Biscuits all the time, no bread. When we're on the docks, it wasn't so bad because sometimes the ships give you bread, you know what I mean, with the cooks, you know what I mean, on the ships, you know, they just shout, you know, and give you probably the bread, but that was a bonus, in a sense, rather than anything else. And, but the compos were quite good, in that sense, they were quite feeding in that. Well, they were handy as well as this tin box, because what you did was, after you got your tin box, you put a wire handle through it, cut the top out, and it became your brew can. The same tin that had the biscuits in became your brew can, you know, for brewing your tea in. Your tea was tea with powdered milk mixed, no sugar, and that was what you got it. We used to put it, sprinkle on the top of the water when it came to boil, hit the sides of the can, and it goes down, and that used to be your tea. So that was these brew cans, and also when you have some of the food in the compost, such as the, I think it's the bacon, you used to have a tin of it, and a sort of a, like a separating sheet of like polythene stuff wrapped in it. Well, the fat was all set, so they had to be boiled in hot water for so length of time until the stuff was there, and you got them out and punctured the tops always, and then you opened the cans up, you know, and you had McConaughey steak and kidney puddings. That was quite good, some of the stuff on them, so they were quite good feeding in that way. Handy the boxes, because the wood boxes, you could build your fire with the wood and not make a lot of smoke. You know, you could actually, when we're on this train, later on when I got on this train going across up the front, about 8 days on this train, where we're just setting these out to the side of the coach and letting the air draft and keep feeding them, I mean, making them sort of like our own braces. It was going that slow, you get off and walk nearly on the train at times.
So you landed without opposition at Algiers.
I did, yes. I did.
And did this unloading work.
Yes.
And then you spent 8 days going up to the front.
Yes, well, first of all, went up to Sukal Harbour, I think it was, Sukal Harbour. We were loading up there and setting up in more dumps, there were, on our way towards the front, and I got malaria. Eventually landed up in Constantine, in the hospital there. They said it was one that had just been completed, a new one. Well, eventually from there, I was sent back to the IRTD in Algiers, which we'd helped to set up when we were first there working from that area in Fort Delu. During the period there, there was Grenadiers and Welsh reinforcements in the group, and some Coldstreamers had come, arrived, and we joined up eventually to head back up to join our battalions. We got onto a train, and it was just crawling along. It was being stopped and shunted and everything, and eventually we ended up 8 days on this train, and we lived and fed on it. And we were guarding rations on the train at the same time. We're doing a job, but actually guarding the stuff on the train. Sometimes we pulled into these, I'm trying to think of it, the trees, the lovely, the nice eucalyptus, the trees and that, the smell, pulling into sidings and stuff like this because at that stage, the German aircraft was fairly busy and fairly active trying to knock us out. And even later, when I went joined the battalion, you could not